Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
Absolutely.
If we're uncomfortable
Absolutely.
Talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
Good morning, and welcome to another episode of What's Next. I'm executive producer Charles Gilbert. Today, we're previewing two upcoming events. We'll hear from a youth-led group working to educate kids about clean mobility. And then we'll take a look at the Food is Medicine Symposium happening this weekend, beginning Friday, October 24th. First, we speak with Kim LeVere, Managing Director of the Clementine Gold Group. She joins What's Next contributor, Naila Ansari-Cotillo, to preview Clean Mobility, Buffalo's East Side Forward, Full Charge Ahead, an event taking place on November 1st at the Northland Workforce Training Center. The event is free and family-friendly, featuring educational programs about transportation equity in Buffalo.
And today, we're turning our attention to Buffalo's East Side, a community rich with history, culture, and resilience. And we have a major initiative and event happening on November 1st, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Northland Workforce Training Center called East Side Forward, Full Charge Ahead. It's about to take center stage and is a promising, not just in conversation, but promising in action. There's a special premiere that we had an awesome interview with our Mobility Matters podcasters, some awesome 10-year-olds in the house and 9-year-olds in the house. I might have to say my favorite guests so far. But we also have Kim LeVere here who's going to talk about the entire event itself, because there's the premiere in the podcast, so I'm definitely going to support my buddies that I met today. But then there's also the full event as well that's going to give us a strong understanding of the initiative and clean mobility.
Yes, and I think, to back up just a bit, Clean Mobility Buffalo, which is the overall initiative, has been going on for the past few years. So, this event on November 1st is really about sort of showing all the work that we've done so far, in terms of, e-bikes out in community. We have a bike share that's all electric. We're working on, connecting trails on the east side. We're also working on, workforce development programs. We have our youth program. Obviously, you've met
yes.
the kids. And we're also working on a small business initiative to make sure that those folks, as we sort of move to that electric future, they're not left behind.
Wonderful. And you use the phrase, let's charge ahead, which is so powerful. I love that. What does that mean in context of the East Side and this initiative of being able to be full charge ahead
yeah.
in clean mobility?
I think that full charge ahead is both, a little nod to the electric components of clean mobility, but also we are full charge ahead. We are implementing. You are going to see more bikes out. There are folks who are using the e-bike library to get to work, get to medical appointments. Just everything is happening. Our first workforce cohort has been through. They have graduation this week. So we're very excited because we had 100% placement from the program.
Oh, that's wonderful. It's amazing news. You got me all excited today. Clean Mobility has just like lifted my spirits up to hear all the amazing work that you all are doing. We often talk about revitalization and what does that mean and who it benefits. How are you ensuring that the movement centers the people who already call the East Side home?
Yeah. So, we're working with a lot of groups that are local and native to the East Side, East Side Bike Club, George Johnson and mm-hmm. folks, definitely a big one. But we're also working with our neighborhood leadership group, which is a group of about 20 community folks who are connected, who can talk about the things that they want to see and, you know, give us feedback on, you know, where a bike station should be or what intersection they would like improved. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, really taking that information and making sure that it's community led in some way.
Absolutely. There's a lot of conversation about preparing Buffalo's workforce for the future. I know you mentioned small business being a part of that. Can you speak to, especially with clean energy and advanced manufacturing, all of those things, can you speak a little bit to that full charge initiative in this event with small business?
Yeah. So, you know, we've been working for the past about year now with some small businesses, working with, you know, automotive and, you know, folks who will be impacted as we don't have to go for, you know, the sort of car service that you do now with a combustible mm-hmm. engine, and helping them skill up, helping their folks skill up. You know, we've been working with, you know, we've been working with Northland a bit. We're also working with Pathways Unbound, who is leading the workforce development program, as well as the unions are involved. We have Local 210. You know, it's just really focusing on being as holistic as possible, helping everyone plan for that future.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's important to have that collaboration and those organizations involved because you want to be able to make sure that the mission extends out and that folks know. You know, I think it's hard for sometimes people to grasp this concept of mobility and clean mobility, because you know, people are getting their cars all the time and they're just driving, not thinking much of it. So I think it's difficult for people to understand at scale when everyone's driving and everyone's doing the same thing over and over again. It creates a mass issue for all of us.
Definitely. And you know, I think that's where like electric vehicles come in. We're actually going to be piloting this fall and winter our electric vehicle car share. So you'll be able to, you know, rent one, whether it's like on an app, you can rent it for an hour, for a day, however you need to use it, so that folks can get more comfortable with electric vehicles, but also making sure that folks who may not have access to a vehicle otherwise can get where they need to go.
Oh, that's wonderful. You know, it sounds like what the organization's doing, Clean Mobility, but also this event, it's really a community experience for all of us to really not only to be able to understand mobility on a large scale, but for us to be able to implement it in our own personal lives. What do you want people to walk away from with this event feeling?
Yeah, so I think this event is really like come and learn more. You can see our youth podcast is launching that day, so the kids will be there to chat with folks. There's a listening lounge that's sponsored by Bank on Buffalo. We also have, you know, some games going on. You're going to be able to try bikes and, you know, check out an electric vehicle, climb inside, touch everything. It's just really meant to be interactive. And we're also going to be focusing on some of the best practices that we've learned. So if there are other organizations that want to implement some of these initiatives, we can give them sort of the playbook.
Oh, wonderful. You know, whenever we talk about transformation, we know it's not easy. What are some of the challenges you're encountering, whether it's funding, you know, community trust or systemic barriers? Because, you know, for some people, energy is like, you know, whatever, doesn't seem to affect me, you know, directly. So sometimes it's hard to get folks on board.
Yeah, definitely. I think the education piece has been big, mm-hmm. explaining to folks like what the changes are, because, you know, none of us really change.
They're like, I like my car. Why do I need an electric car?
Right. Sort of telling them the benefits, but also showing them how things work so you can sort of get more invested in what's happening. And I think that that's been really important. I also think we've been navigating a lot of the systemic barriers, mm-hmm. you know, thinking about the ways that folks are impacted in just their day-to-day lives. So our workforce development program has been very intentional about meeting folks where they are. And if they need some additional support in some way, they need a connection to services, they don't know how to open a bank account, mm-hmm. like, you know, anything that might sort of hinder them from participating in different things. Obviously, transportation being a big one.
Right.
So
yeah,
we make
absolutely sure
that we have ways for folks to get to the job opportunities as well.
That is amazing. You know, there's a major role in storytelling and media, and I know the podcasters, our little ones, have a great way of storytelling their initiative and the work that they're doing. What ways do you all feel like your story is being told here in Western New York.
You know, I hope that our story is told in the people that are ultimately that benefit from the program. So, you know, the folks that have that new job or, you know, are able to get around easier. We had one gentleman come into Eastside Bike Club and just, he was just incredibly joyful about being able to access the bike, and he takes it to work and he takes it to all of his appointments, and it's made things so much easier for him. And that's just been, when we hear stories like that, I think those are the real stories, because I could tell you lots of things, right? Mm-hmm. Stats, maybe that doesn't make anyone super excited. But I think when you see the people and you see the impact, that's what gets me going.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of biking, I got to get on my bike. I get a little nervous in the city, though. So can you talk a little bit about folks that are going to get on their bikes and maybe a little nervous of getting in the streets with the cars?
Yes.
So, you know, there's pathways. And, you know, people actually push for legislations to make sure that there's... So can you talk a little bit about that for folks that are a little scared like me to get on a bike in the city?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. So if there are areas that you are scared, you should definitely let us know. GoBike is one of our partners, and they have been coming in and redoing intersections. We're adding bike lanes. We're doing traffic calming measures just to really make sure that folks that want to bike can bike safely, because there are areas that can feel kind of daunting.
Yes, absolutely. I'm like, ooh, maybe I'm going to figure out, maybe find a side street.
Yes.
So that I can get my safety on. So I'm excited. I'll connect with you after that on best streets. And folks out there, if you know any streets that you don't feel like is bike safe, please make sure you reach out as well.
Yes.
Well, as we wrap up, I look forward to November 1st, and I look forward to being full charge ahead on this initiative and this event and going beyond the event. I'm excited to keep up with you all too. How can everyone connect so we learn more about clean mobility and also the event on November 1st?
So you can definitely check us out at cleanmobilitybuffalo.org. That has the majority of the information. Our Facebook page is also very lively on events and, you know, just updates. And I think, you know, if anything, just reach out to Clementine Gold Group. We can always connect you as well.
Oh, awesome. And I wanted to connect as well for folks that want to volunteer, participate, and support. They can also connect as well, because, you know, we all need volunteers. And if folks want to come out and help us with clean mobility, we're open for it.
Yes. If you are interested, we would love to hear from you.
Wonderful. I want to thank my guest, Kim LaVere, for joining me today from Clean Mobility, and for your work and the work that you all are doing on the East Side and the work that your Clementine's doing across the region. It's amazing. Buffalo's story has been one of resilience and creativity and community, and you are definitely adding to that story and the progress that we are all trying to make here as well.
At the event, a youth-led group will launch their new podcast, Mobility Matters, hosted by Brett and Blake LaVere and Willow Seinfeld. The team speaks with Naila Ansari Cotillo about their experience creating the show and the importance of promoting clean transportation, including e-bikes and electric buses.
So this event that's coming up, you know, we'll get all of the deets on it for everyone listening, but this podcast that's happening, I have to say I am excited for this podcast to launch after chatting with you all before we went on air today. These are some amazing kids with an awesome initiative. So can you talk a little bit about what is Mobility Matters? What is your podcast and why are you all doing it?
Okay, so Mobility Matters is this project that my mom and her coworker / legal daughter, Natalia, came up with. Basically, the whole idea of Mobility Matters was to create a youth-led podcast. That way, kids can learn about clean mobility.
And your mom is Kim LaVere for all those listening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, Blake, you tell us, what's your take on Clean Mobility Matters in this podcast that you all have launching?
I think I'm probably going to go similar with Bert. We're basically creating a podcast to spread the word about clean mobility, promoting things like e-bikes, bikes, electric buses, and stuff like that.
Awesome. How about you, Willow? Are you excited about the podcast?
Yeah. My thing is similar to them. It's about, like, teaching kids about clean mobility and how it works and, like, teaching kids on podcasting and stuff.
Awesome. Well, we have a lot of listeners, and some of our listeners are kids all the way up to maybe your grandparents' age. What is clean mobility? Can you explain that to our audience and our listeners tonight?
Yeah, sure. So clean mobility is basically, it's a foundation that Mobility Matters is a subdivision of, that is working to promote the use of, like I said before, e-bikes, bikes, or electric buses.
And why is that important, Will? Why do you think that might be important in a really busy city with a lot of cars and maybe a lot of pollution?
Because it's bad for the air and stuff, and we need clean transportation so it doesn't get really bad.
Very true. So you all have already had 6 episodes, correct? So
yes.
You all are, like, into it in the game. How do you all feel about podcasting? Were you nervous? How have you all been with interviewing folks?
Well, originally, I would say that I was kind of nervous about accidentally messing up on camera. But as we did more and more episodes, it kind of felt more fun, and I didn't really worry as much.
What about you, Blake?
I want to say I was definitely nervous, but I was also excited because I felt like when we started working on it, it was pretty fun. But then when we came to record our episodes, it was Wednesday in the summer, around the middle of July, start of August. So when we were recording episodes, our first guest had like an emergency, so we postponed the recording, which got me kind of nervous. And now I'm like, how are we gonna fill this in? So we somehow came through, and we did a production with a driver of an e-bus from the NFTA. We interviewed 2 interns at Clementine Gold Group, which I'm pretty sure is also a subsidiary of Beverly Gray Exchange and Queen Mobility Buffalo.
What about you, Willa? Were you nervous about starting this podcast? Were you excited?
I was nervous at first, but then once we started interviewing more people, I, like, sort of got more excited and, like, got more excited to interview more people and, like, learn about what they do and who they are as a person.
And you have 6 interviews already, and you all had some pretty special people. I know you just mentioned the bus driver, but who else did you interview?
We had legislator Lawrence Dupree, Senator Sean Ryan, Rachel from
Zev,
thank you. And Harvey, I think,
from the Eastside Bike Club.
I think Harvey was actually, when I was saying earlier about him, I think Harvey was the one who we had to postpone his thing because he had something serious.
Yes, yeah, which happens a lot, especially when you are recording and you're in the crux of a lot of strong work that you're doing, like clean mobility. A lot of things happen kind of quickly, so sometimes you have to make that pivot, which you all are learning, right? Particularly when you record or if you're recording live. So you all had Senator Sean Ryan. What were some of the things that he was talking about? What kind of questions did you have for him?
I asked him about, he had this thing called Vision Zero, which sounded, I think from what it read on the website, people probably thought it was like not bad. I thought it had something to do with clean mobility, but it also, when it said, when it was Vision Zero, like, does that name not sound at least a tiny bit ominous?
Mm-hmm.
So I asked him about that, and it's not ominous. It's just a plan to spread clean mobility, not just throughout here in Buffalo, but around, like, New York State.
Well, what are some initiatives that you all think that we should take on as a region for clean mobility? I'll throw that one to you, Bert.
Mm-hmm.
What are some things that we can do better?
Well, start using bikes more when we can.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe start using more of, like, public transportation, like the e-bus that we mentioned. Or just use, like, an e-bike, an e-car, anything that won't put gases into the environment that could hurt people's lungs.
What about you, Lola? What are some things you think that we can do?
Yeah, we could start using more bikes and we don't have to drive everywhere. We could walk if we really can. If it's not, like, too far away, we could start walking.
Yeah, so we're getting our health in, on multiple fronts, yeah. Right? That way we can get our exercise in. Now, you all, we were joking because you all were teaching me on 6-7 and all the new kid lingo for folks that can't see, we're moving our hands up and down for 6-7. And I bring that up because you all are part of a new generation where there's mobility matters to you all. How do you get your generation to dive deep in and get and spread it across, similar to how you all spread 6-7 and nobody still knows what it is and they just kind of tagged on? How are you all getting your age group to listen?
To spread out mobility matters, that's actually a good question. I'm not sure. I feel like most kids are into games and being lazy, so I think it's going to be kind of difficult to just get mobility matters out to certain kids. We could probably do it. We just need a bit more. If we can spread the word out more, if we can get parents to care about it, they can probably get their kids to care about it too.
Do you all think that you can inspire more kids, especially with the podcast, to get them to start thinking about things that are important to them to give a better world and a better region for us?
Yes. For me personally, I would say to spread clean mobility throughout my generation. It looks like a lot of people like to make it kind of like fun or like a game. So what if we did kind of like the bingo boards that we used to do, or I came up with an idea that's like ride a bike for 1 hour, receive 1,000 Robux or something like that. Mm-hmm.
What about you, Willa? What are some things that you all can do to get your generation more involved?
We could turn it into a game, or and it could teach kids about it on the game, and it's so they don't get really bored, because some kids don't like listening to podcasts. So we could turn it into the game, and if kids don't like games, we could start talking about more in school and stuff.
Yes. So.
So basically, something kind of like a blicket or a cookie.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's kind of. Yeah. That's kind of. I feel like they're probably same. I turn it into a game. I know so many kids that play Roblox or Minecraft. So I'm thinking.
My kids.
So, yeah. Yeah. So if I'm thinking, Bert's probably correct. If we could spread a deal around if you do this, you will receive this. That could probably encourage kids to get more interested in the mobility matters and whatnot. Listen to our podcast for 1 hour and receive this Roblox avatar, or ride a bike for 24 hours, just general 24 hours. Receive 10,000 mine coins.
Mm-hmm. Which is awesome because it's incentivizing, right? We do that in schools all the time. Teachers incentivize you. You can have,
They give out prizes and stuff.
Exactly.
In my class, they give out, if we win something, you get a sucker or a piece of gum. First of all, I'm just going to say I'm not a gum person. So I always give them to my brother.
For me, in my class, if we're doing something nice, we get to pick out of this jar with a lot of nice things. And it's usually take a 10-minute break or watch a movie or something like that.
So we're gonna plan some incentives so we can get more of your generation in, so that they can also be a part of this initiative with being clean and having clean mobility that matters to all of us. So you all are gonna be on multiple platforms. So it's also video as well. So are you all learning the behind the scenes, or do you all have folks helping you? How are you all putting this show together?
We know this one person named Jamil mm-hmm. Cruz. Some people might know him. So he has his own recording studio. So we recorded all our episodes in there. So basically we put together, we're editing it together, because we had one episode with legislator Lawrence Dupree, mm-hmm. which did really good. My mom actually said that, so spoiler alert, the episode might be we might nominate the series for an Emmy, which is going to be Best Limited Series of 2025.
Oh, that's awesome.
And also during the Lawrence Dupree interview, he made an Erie County-wide holiday that said that August 13th every year would become Mobility Matters Day in Erie County.
Oh, that's wonderful. Look, you all are making change already just in 6 episodes.
Yep, we already.
It was pretty cool.
That was our second episode, actually. That was on the very first day, Wednesday, August 13th, and we already have a signed petition with Clementine Gold Group at Beverly Gray Exchange. If you look through the window, So there's two monitors. Look next to them, and you'll see a ton of awards. The giant one is the certificate making the day Mobility Matters Day.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I just want to say, for people who work at Beverly Gray Exchange, you can find the certificate in the Clementine Gold Groove office.
We'll have to have folks stop by so they can see that. Well, who's been your favorite guest so far?
Senator Sean Ryan.
Senator Sean Ryan. Well, what made you like Senator Sean Ryan?
He made me feel more comfortable because, like, usually it's like he, like, asked more, like, questions to us too, so it wasn't just like we asked you this question, they answer, we asked this question. He asked us some questions too, and it made me feel more comfortable.
Oh, that's awesome. You know, it's sometimes anything that looks at clean mobility and why it should matter, sometimes it can get really tricky for people because there's a lot of science behind it. How do you all make it tangible or make it easier for people to understand some of the science behind clean energy and mobility?
I think we have, like, the people who came in and talked about it. I feel we ask them, mm-hmm. So before we record each episode, we ask them to try to explain it in kind of kid terms, help kids get more invested. I feel that's how, because like you said, it's very complex. That's very true.
Yes.
It's hard to understand, but I think having our guests explain it in kid-friendly terms, I think that's probably how.
Even for adults, it's hard for adults to understand, and the impact, right? What you all are doing is going to provide a lot of impact to many groups. So I want to go down the line for each one of you. Tell me why we should listen to Mobility Matters.
For me, I'm going to say it's because if you listen to Mobility Matters, you will get motivated to try to clean our air and reduce it of smoke. If we have a reduced amount of smoke, there will be less, like, global warming. And if there's less global warming, Antarctica will exist for the next 300 years.
And also there will be less, like, lung cancer.
Mm-hmm. So why is it important to you, Bert? Why is this podcast important to folks? Why should we tune in?
Because, well, it could teach people about clean mobility that are like, hey, I've never really heard about clean mobility. What is this? So basically, our episodes could teach you about clean mobility in the form of an interview.
Oh, awesome. And what about you, Willa?
If you listen to clean mobility, maybe if you don't really like biking or walking, it would help people more in walking and biking, and it can get them exercising.
Beginning this Friday, the Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus will host its 5th annual Food is Medicine Symposium. The symposium focuses on health, community empowerment, and the power of food and wellness. What's Next contributor Ekua Menzedu previews the 3-day event with Beth Macnica, Director of Health and Wellbeing at the Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus, and Purnima Moham, Health and Wellbeing Program Manager. They discuss this year's focus on women's health, lifestyle medicine, and culinary innovation.
So can you just talk about the inception of this event and why you first created it?
Yep. So we started actually during COVID, during 2021. And if anyone's familiar, COVID really exposed the holes in our healthcare system and our food system. And it really was created just as a call to action to respond to the direct needs we were seeing in our work in our community. And it was a free event. We were able to engage about 100 people on Zoom on a Saturday, the entire day. And what we learned from that first meeting was that people wanted more. They realized the connection, the direct link between the health system and the food system. And COVID really shined the light on that. We saw that people who were in better health were in food insecure, fared better. And if you were food insecure or had chronic disease, you weren't as resilient. So from there, we started the Western New York Food is Medicine Coalition, and the program has really just built over time. And now we're in person at the Jacobs School of Medicine. We get about 300 people at the event, clinicians, healthcare providers, community members, chefs, farmers, elected officials, really everyone coming together around food.
That's awesome. And to hear how it came so far from when you first convened it to now the 5th iteration of that. And so I know that the BNMC has been a key convener around food, health, and equity for years. So what inspired this year's focus, and how does it reflect the broader vision for BNMC's role in the community?
I think a lot of what we think about is equity. and health equity is at the heart. It's the beating heart of the symposium. Mm-hmm. You can't have food as medicine. You can't feel the benefits of that if you don't have access to food. And so equity is something that's threaded through everything that we do in the symposium, in partnering with the folks at Igniting Hope Conference, partnering with the Buffalo Center for Health Equity, you know, making sure that physicians aren't just screening for food insecurity, but also having the resources to be able to refer out so they can actually make those connections.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so, Pranima, I know you've been a leader in this space for a while, connecting food systems to community health. So how did you get involved with the symposium and what drew you to this work?
Yeah, as Beth mentioned, our symposium started in 2021 on a Saturday, and I just attended the symposium all day, and I was so inspired. A few months later, this job opportunity opened up, actually, and then here I am 5 years later hosting the symposium, so super excited for the 5 years that we've hosted this, and we bring in vendors that are focused on food equity. We have poster sessions this year as well. And we just kind of try to bring everyone together by different poster sessions, the presentations that we have. This year, we're focusing on women's health, sports medicine, so a variety of topics. And it's a 3-day symposium this year for the first time.
Wow. It's definitely expanded in terms of what your focus has been. And so when I look at the agenda and the speakers that you have planning to come, the symposium brings out local, national, and international voices as well. And so we see things from culinary innovators to clinicians. What unique conversations are happening and what might the public find about this year?
So we have a really exciting keynote. We have two keynotes, actually. The first is Erin Martin. She is a gerontologist, so she studies healthy living, aging, and longevity. And so she comes from an organization called Fresh RX Oklahoma that focuses on connecting farmers to the healthcare system and using local food and produce prescriptions to reverse chronic disease. So she is really exciting. She's doing some great work also at the policy level. So we're bringing her here to Western New York to learn from her. And our second keynote is George Karamalis, and he is featured in the Living to 100 Netflix series on the Blue Zones. And so he's coming from Ikaria, Greece, talking about the lifestyle of longevity. And this is something that's really important to us because we want to make it known that you don't have to live in a blue zone to practice the healthy lifestyle of one. And you don't have to live in Ikaria, Greece, or Sardinia, Italy, or Okinawa to get the benefits. And we want people to know that and learn how.
That's awesome. And so I know often people talk about like the Mediterranean diet and, you know, how that extends folks' lives. And so are there going to be conversations around like examples that people can really enhance their own lives and be able to take that with them?
Yeah, exactly. So in addition to that, that same day, actually on Saturday, we have an entire session about lifestyle medicine that builds off of that. And we'll actually have participants from our own Food as Medicine program called 40 Days to Wellness. And they'll be talking about how they've sustained the behaviors they've learned with us. It's about a year later after doing the program. So people will learn about social connection, the importance of not only nutrition and movement, but also stress management and sleep quality. We have a whole session dedicated towards sleep.
Oh, that sounds amazing in itself. I think I need to come learn more about the sleep side. But you mentioned women's health outcomes and the role of nutrition across a lifespan. So how are those conversations helping to shift policy and practice in tangible ways?
So there's something called the women's health gap, where essentially we're not only under research, so a lot of the scientific research features men, but we're also misdiagnosed, underdiagnosed, yet a lot of our health issues take up a greater proportion of the disease that's out there. So it's very significant when you talk about women's health, maternal health, health equities and disparities. So we want to take both practitioners and the general audience through the lifespan of a woman from adolescence and fertility to pregnancy, nutrition, menopause, and then also talk about the disparities in health inequities and how each of us, no matter where we are, any corner in the community, can help address and really advocate for women.
So it sounds like both of you are working at the intersection of health, culture, and systems change. I want to learn more about your own personal connection to this work. And so what personal experiences or moments really shaped your passion for this work?
So my background is in food science. I worked with the food processing industry for many years. And a few years later, I realized in the long run, that's not going to help with my longevity. And I wanted to kind of help promote that. And that's why here I am, moved from the dark side to the bright side here and happy on the well-being side and promoting that through the symposium and through the other programs that we offer at BNMC. So we offer wellness programming through the year. We have workshops that we host every Wednesday. We have Wellness Wednesday walks that we host as well from June through September. And each month has a theme. So January would be like setting your goals for the year. February is Heart Health Month. March is Nutrition Month. April is Earth Month. May is Mental Health Awareness Month. June is Bike to Work Month. So we have programming for that every month that we plan for. And we also have yoga. We have dance therapy. We have boot camps, all kinds of programming that we encourage, and they're all offered for free to the community.
That's awesome. Beth, how about you? Your personal connection?
This is very deep for me. Being from Buffalo, born and raised, I grew up eating hamburger helper, rice-a-roni, lots of chicken wings. I probably sat too much and didn't move enough. And I myself had a chronic condition and was able to reverse it using lifestyle and nutrition. It wasn't easy. Mm-hmm. And I think I learned a lot of wisdom along the way. And what I'm trying to do now is share that wisdom with the community so it's not as hard for everyone else to learn how to cook food that's not only healthy, but also tastes delicious. Mm-hmm. Because habit change can be very overwhelming. And sometimes we feel like we have to be perfect, but perfect is a myth. You don't have to be perfect. It's the little things and steps that we do every day that compound.
Yeah. And over time, right? Like people need to make those small changes and they become long lasting changes over time. So I can appreciate that for sure. And so in the press release, you mentioned wanting to create a space where clinical care, culinary innovation, and culture spark meaningful change. What examples can we see those sparks already happening in Western New York? This is the fifth year that you've been doing this. And so what, you know, examples can you share with us that have come from all your work so far?
It's really exciting. So the first result was the Western New York Food is Medicine Coalition, which now is still going strong, has over 400 members and over 180 organizations from the healthcare sector, from community health, food systems, all coming together to advance this work right here in our community. Another result is Healthy Options Restaurant Week. So every spring for March and National Nutrition Month, we partner with about 20 to 25 restaurants and growing to teach them how to create healthy menu items that also taste good. And we bring the community out. We have samples at Northland and just have a health conversation about awareness about these things. And then finally, probably one of my most favorite outcomes is the new teaching kitchen that's being built at the University at Buffalo. So this is an interdisciplinary kitchen with the School of Public Health, the Jacobs School of Medicine, and we'll have chefs, doctors, dietitians all working together to translate sort of the science of nutrition, the joy of cooking, and making things taste good.
So if we had to fast forward 5 years into the future, if everything goes the way that you hope, what does the impact of the symposium look like? And what's the dream? It's a big question.
It's a big one. It's a big, hairy, audacious goal.
Right.
I mean, we want to make Buffalo a blue zone. Whether that would happen in 10 years, I don't know.
And explain what a blue zone is for folks that might not know.
So the blue zones are five regions throughout the world that have the largest population of centenarians. So these are people that are 100 years and older, and they not only have the longevity, but they also have functionality and health span. So they're not retiring to take pills and having surgeries and have poor quality of life. These are folks that are playing pickleball and having a glass of wine with their friends and walking everywhere and gardening and have that social life and connection. And so we really want to see that in Buffalo, even though we have 7 months of cold and lake effect snow. Sometimes we think it's still possible to do that here. So I don't really see any organization in Buffalo being competition. I would love more people to adopt and embrace food as medicine and Wellness Wednesdays and just embrace that culture of well-being.
Yeah, so you don't necessarily have to live in a blue zone, like Beth mentioned. We can make Buffalo a blue zone by just living a blue zone lifestyle, by following the six pillars of lifestyle medicine that she alluded to earlier with the sleep, physical activity, the nutrition, stress management, avoiding risky substances, etc. And we're hoping George, our keynote speaker from the blue zones, will inspire some of us here, those who attend the symposium.
And that, I think that's a great point, because when you think about, you know, our environment, right, and our weather, folks will often talk about, okay, we hibernate during these cold weather times. And so what kind of events, you know, have you seen people kind of take up in those winter moments, you know, in the winter months? And what do you think works well for us when you think about like our own weather and environment?
I would say cooking is really, you know, great, because that was the most popular thing at our 40 Days to Wellness program that we offered. So we had 108 participants who participated in the program last fall, and we, you know, gave them ingredients for the cooking class. We had a chef who talked about nutrition, about how to eat on a budget, how to cook heart-healthy meals, how to read nutrition labels, etc. And that's easy to do. And obviously, you know what's going into the food. We also learned how to cook with water. You don't need to cook with oil all the time. And that was the most popular thing that all the participants enjoyed. We also offered mindfulness workshops weekly. We provided medically tailored meals. They had access to a registered dietitian. So I think since diet is the cause for all the chronic diseases, cooking and knowing what goes into your food, I think is really exciting. And that can be done, you know, 24/7 throughout the year. And the results that we had from the 40 Days to Wellness program, the outcomes were statistically significant. We saw higher energy levels and lower fatigue. And we didn't even actually have physical activity as part of that program, but people said they were more physically active and mentally active because of the program that they went through. So I think cooking would be great. And at our symposium on Saturday, the day we are having the lifestyle medicine, we do have a culinary medicine demonstration by a chef, a doctor, and a registered dietitian. It's going to be Chef Darian Bryan from Brad's Hill, and it's going to be Dr. Alicia Lal, who's the only board-certified lifestyle medicine physician in Buffalo. And we have Olivia Thomas from Boston Medical Center, who's a registered dietitian. So we're all going to be learning some healthy cooking, and hopefully we'll take those skills back with us. And Univera Healthcare is sponsoring that segment for us.
That's awesome. And so, you know, Beth, when you had first kind of introduced yourself and talked about the work, and we started to talk more about disparities as well, we often talk about the things that we call social determinants of health, right? And we know that 20% of someone's overall health is just access to a doctor, but the other 80% are coming from social and environmental factors. And so I'm wondering, you know, when you think about food insecurity, right, and food apartheid, even in our own communities, what type of things, you know, can we start to address through the work that you're doing to really make sure that we're bridging the gap for folks who might not have that sense of security when it comes to food?
It's a really important question and a serious question and something we take very seriously. A model that has really worked for us so far in our 40 Days to Wellness program that Pranima mentioned is partnering with entrepreneurs in the community. The business owners who are from the east side of Buffalo or neighborhoods that are facing food apartheid that have the same vision as us. And, you know, it could be a farmer, it could be a corner store owner. And we're partnering with them to deliver healthy food to those who need it the most, and in a way that's sustainable, and they're trusted in the community. That social capital is already there. And so we find that it seems to work well, that model.
When you think about the event itself, I want to give folks some information about, you know, how they might get involved. What can other folks do, right? Maybe they're healthcare providers, community members, food advocates. What's one tangible way that they can plug in and support this work?
They can show up. We're offering continuing education credits for both physicians and dietitians. You're getting between 8 and 12 credits, which is significant for a $150 value event. If you're a consumer, a general member of the public, you might learn about food policy and how to advocate, so that we're talking to our local legislators and elected officials for how to push some of these things forward. You'll learn how to practice these things in your day-to-day life. And if, let's say, you're a farmer, perhaps a community health leader, how can you advocate for food as a social determinant of health as it relates to perhaps other pillars of well-being, to advocate for that for the communities that you serve? It's open to everyone, and we hope to see you there.
And give us the dates and where people can find more information as well.
Yes. So the dates are October 23rd through the 25th. It's being hosted at the Jacobs School of Medicine. The website is bnmc.org/health and wellbeing. And we also have a farm tour to start off to kick off the symposium. We have a networking session at Groundwork Market Garden on Friday evening, where Lloyd's is going to be catering. We also have yoga both days on Friday and Saturday in the morning. We have chair massages all day Friday and Saturday as well. So we have a lot of fun things. So please don't miss it.
So it sounds like food, fun, you know, a lot of learning that's going to be happening for folks. When you think about ways that, you know, maybe community can show up, right? Like, are there other activities that might speak directly to the community?
I think Saturdays are community day. That's why we have the lifestyle medicine piece, and we would like everyone to learn about that and the culinary medicine demonstration. We also have a culinary medicine panel after that. So I think that's our community day, and we might have a mobile market there as well.
And so I'm going to ask you just a couple kind of like lightning round questions for you all. So what's a food that feels like medicine for you personally? Pranima, you talked about cooking in the wintertime. And so I automatically thought about comfort food.
Yeah, soups for me are my favorite. So anytime it's like a one pot meal, easy to make, you put everything in, your vegetables, your lentils, beans, everything. So for me, soup would be food as medicine.
Hearty, like hearty greens, a big hearty salad, maybe with some dried fruit, crumbled cheese in there. That is just the best.
That sounds delicious too. What's one Buffalo food tradition you'd prescribe to someone visiting for the first time? And maybe we can do this in a healthier version, right?
I always recommend squeeze.
Oh, okay. That's a good one. That's definitely a good one. Juices.
Mm-hmm. Juices, salad bowls.
I agree.
And then is there a book, mentor, or moment that's been especially inspiring for you in this journey?
I love the author Michael Pollan. He has a couple books, Omnivore's Dilemma, In Defense of Food, but he has a quote that I really like that sums it all up for maybe folks that are looking to learn more, change their habits. And the quote is, eat food, not too much, mostly plants.
Okay. I like that too.
Yeah, it's eat food made by plants, not eat foods that are made in a plant.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. I like that in terms of remembering the moniker as well. And so when you think about policy, right, it often feels distant from the everyday life. And so people might not always think about the connection. How are you seeing policy, healthcare systems, and community voices actually intersect in your work?
The 1115 waiver is a huge example of how policy is directly impacting us, especially boots on the ground right now in this space. So we have, you know, food as medicine are things like medically tailored meals, produce prescriptions, culinary medicine, teaching kitchens. And for decades, our community-based organizations and nonprofits were delivering these services and not getting paid for it. They were doing it on philanthropic dollars, on donations. And what the 1115 waiver is, it's a New York State policy that's basically allowing these organizations to get reimbursed by health plans for providing this. So this is huge. This is the first time that we're seeing reimbursement for food as medicine, clinically recognized interventions. And so what we suspect to happen within the next, I would say, 5 years is that health insurance companies and health plans are going to start covering food nutrition as a benefit, which, I mean, to us, I mean, that's a win.
That's a huge win, mm-hmm. especially when you think about the wraparound services that are needed to keep folks ultimately healthy. Mm-hmm. And so when you think about access and equity, they're at the heart of these conversations. And so what are some of the real barriers that you might have seen on the ground? And what gives you hope that they can be overcome?
I think transportation is one example that I think of. Any like social determinant, housing also. So, but transportation is a big one, because if you don't have access to culturally relevant, affordable, nutritious food right in your area, you need access to transportation to get to it. And that bus fare that you might be paying is going to get in the way of perhaps, you know, putting food on your table. It shrinks your food dollar. And people want to be healthy. They want to feed their family healthy food, but that doesn't always happen in reality. But that's one of the reasons why in our 40 Days to Wellness program, we used actually bike couriers to do the last mile delivery. And so we worked with a local entrepreneur from the east side of Buffalo, who rode his bike around all 40 square miles of the city and delivered meals to everyone's doorstep. So there's definitely ways to get around it.
Yeah. And it sounds like innovative ways that you're thinking about. How do you include things like transportation, which is a social determinant, and people might have barriers in terms of access from there as well. Are there any like folks in the community who's inspired you or shifted the way that you think about, you know, food and health and well-being?
I always send out my applause for Allison Dehoney and team at Buffalo Go Green. Truly, I mean, when you talk about food as medicine, I really see her as a leader in implementing this. She worked with Community Health Centers of Buffalo to start doing nutrition interventions with the patients there in the community. She has a mobile market. She's growing an agricultural wellness center and campus. And so I just urge everyone to support her farm and her business and the vision that she's building, because our city needs it.
I wanted to thank Highmark, who gave us the grant for the 40 Days to Wellness study. But like you asked for barriers, I think grants are great, but we want to make sure the programs are sustainable over a period of time. And for me, the culturally responsive piece is really important. So I think we need to do a little bit more work on that.
Absolutely. And so I know, you know, doing this type of work can be a lot, right? For folks who are organizing it, such as yourselves. And so it's heavy, but it's also hopeful, right? And when you see the types of things that are coming out, the conversations that are had amongst community members and practitioners. And so I just want you to think about maybe a story from the past few years that might have really reminded you of why you do this. And so can you think of a story that has inspired you or has inspired you to keep going?
I would say with the 40 Days to Wellness study, we saw a lot of changes. Like I mentioned, the participants were, you know, super excited. We had focus groups after the study, and they said that they're even willing to pay for the meals if needed because it really helped them change their health habits. So I think that's a story that I can remember, and that's why I'd like to keep that sustainable and kind of work with them to provide options and, again, move more into the lifestyle medicine piece. So I think that's something that I would say.
And I'm pulling something from our farm to hospital program, which is really where our food as medicine work started. And so it was an 8-year project. We had multiple rounds of funding from the USDA, which we are incredibly gracious for. But the transformation that our local healthcare systems are doing truly is incredible. When I think about the amount of work that has gone into changing their food supply chain procurement to support, you know, over 40 different local farmers in our region in New York State, they got rid of their deep fat fryers and replaced them with air fryers, getting rid of soda, not all of it, but most of it, and replacing it with water and reducing portion sizes in the cafeteria, just making the healthy options the default option. Instead of having to seek out something healthy, it just automatically the side is an apple instead of chips. Things like that. Because to do this at scale, at such a large volume with a huge operation, is such a large task. So I just want to shout out to our hospitals who are doing that.
And to think about that large type of change, right, to happen at a systems level, that makes me think about this last question around if you could, you know, you have a magic wand, right? And you can change one thing about how our healthcare system approaches food. What would that look like?
My change, I would say I'm pretty rooted in the food system. I certainly would change our food policies because I feel like at the root of it, that's really what makes things so difficult. Like our farm bill, most of the subsidies, about 42% of our subsidies go towards corn, wheat, and soy. And most of those are actually going towards biodiesels or feed that's used for animals. It's not even for people. Only 4% of the subsidies actually go to vegetables that we eat. So I would love to flip that around and make, you know, kale, carrots, broccoli heavily subsidized. So we're not only helping the farmers in their business, but also making it more accessible for people so that eating healthy is affordable. And if that were to happen, I feel like it would be a lot easier for healthcare to make recommendations because they would be equitable, affordable, et cetera.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention, so BNMC won this Community Changemaker Award at a national summit that we presented at in Chicago, and it was for the 40 Days to Wellness study that we did. So I think just having more programming like that available for all the participants, I think that would really spark change. And we just want to collaborate with more partners and get clinical data and make it, holistic.
So any other thoughts that you want to share with folks? I know, the conference is coming up. It's 3 specific days. If you want to kind of go over that again and then share any last thoughts that you want to share with folks.
Mm-hmm. So again, it's our 5th annual Food as Medicine Symposium at the UB Jacobs School of Medicine. It is in person and virtual, so it's a hybrid event. So we would love for you to join us virtually if you're able to. But of course, first priority is in person. And so we'll have keynote speakers from Ikaria Greece on Blue Zones and Longevity, Aaron Martin on a produce prescription happening in Oklahoma, sessions on integrative and functional medicine and nutrition, women's health, culinary medicine demos, and panel discussions. And we have poster presentations, yoga, mindful movement, and we practice what we preach. And so all of the food offered at the conference is whole food, plant-based.
Yeah, so please be there October 23rd to 25th. And we would like to thank the Jacobs School of Medicine for hosting us again this year. And TOPS is going to be sponsoring the breakfast and the lunch. So we're excited about all the healthy meals that we're going to be eating. So please be there and enjoy the fun and the learning.
That's all for this episode of What's Next. Be sure to tune in Wednesday when we speak with members from Buffalo-based FBE Production, Bill Davis and Monique Cunningham, as they preview their upcoming 6-part short film series, Our Daily Bread, and a conversation about health literacy with Tara Schaefer and Randy Hope. This has been What's Next from Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.